You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Today on The Grave Talks, Ghost Theories, a conversation with author Kent J. Wolfe. When Kent, his fiancée Maureen, and his young daughters rented an 1865 farmhouse in rural Michigan, they soon discovered they were not alone. Kent, a skeptic, believed everything has a logical answer, while Maureen believed it could be attributed to the paranormal. Confronted with several mysteries like cold spots in the stairwell, missing items, a washing machine lid that would inexplicably raise, unexplainable voices, a cat seeming to enjoy invisible attention, plus several encounters with a childlike apparition that moved freely from room to room, they still chose to remain in the house for 5 years. Today on The Grave Talks, we'll discuss his book, Ghost Theories, Raising a Family in a Haunted House, with author Kent J. Wolfe. So, Kent, thank you so much for being on the show today. And I always am interested in talking with people who lived in a haunted house. You know, I think when you live in an environment like that, and it's kind of a day-to-day part of your life, it kind of changes how you look at the world, I think. But you actually rented a haunted house, correct?
Correct, yep.
And then you lived there for quite a while. And then I'm assuming it was years later, you wrote a book about it.
That's correct. So how it got started was we rented the haunted house. Well, I sold my other house looking for a farmhouse to rent. And lo and behold, this one came up. My girlfriend at the time, Maureen, and I went and looked at it, which, you know, I was excited just to hopefully live in the country again. So we went in, and the Cap and Ronnie Moon interviewed us. And when we went into the dining room, I started feeling funny, like tingly, and it got worse and worse, or better, depends on how you look at it. But it was, you know, euphoric, and it was quite interesting. I didn't really know what was going on or why it was. I thought it was just, you know, being excited about the prospect of living in a nice farmhouse. Later, you know, when Maureen and I compared notes, that's when I discovered that she had some feelings too. And they were quite strong. At one time, it was, you know, I needed to move in right away. It was almost a panicky thing. You know, if I don't live there, you know, it's not going to be good. But it was quite interesting to compare notes with her.
I think that's such an interesting response to the house, to have that kind of response. I need to be here. I'm feeling really bizarrely excited about being in this house. Whereas a lot of times you walk into a house like that and you feel maybe more of a darkness or someone's watching
me. A foreboding, maybe.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was interesting when I was reading the book that you both experienced that kind of we need to live here feeling.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
It was almost like it was drawing you in.
And that's kind of what it felt like, you know, was drawing us in. But, you know, for me, the sensations were mainly in the dining room area. Maureen in the dining room, plus upstairs in the closet that went from one bedroom to another. She had some feelings in there. When we were looking at the house, I did not walk through the closet, even though she was prodding me to. So maybe I would have if I had gone in, but I didn't go in.
Had you ever had an experience with a paranormal or had lived someplace where there was a ghost or had any experience with that? Or were you skeptical or somewhere kind of in between?
Well, I had never experienced anything paranormal prior to that. I've always been kind of a skeptic of it, you know. So in the book, I kind of explain that, you know, people have been dying for millions of years. So why aren't we overrun with ghosts if they truly do exist? So, you know, Maureen and I had some pretty good conversations about that. But anyway, no, I never experienced anything paranormal. When I was a teenager, my father bought a old farmhouse and lived there, but never had any type of encounters or feelings or, you know, being scared or happy, either one.
Maureen felt it, though.
She sure did.
She was more open to it and believed in it and the possibilities of it. And you were totally not buying it.
I wasn't buying it at first. She was. I wasn't buying it. I just assumed it was because I was excited to move into a haunted house, you know, and it was kind of a, you know, rainy day and driving over there and, you know, the adrenaline factor, I call it. So after getting in there, into the house and talking with the owners, our future landlords, you know, it made me nervous. And so I blamed it pretty much on that was what was going on. Just an adrenaline kind of rush.
And it was an old house, like 1865.
1865, yes.
So when you went there and you met with the landlords and they didn't say anything about it. I mean, that's no way to rent a house, though, either. It's like, right. How do you like the house? By the way, there are some ghosts that live here. Just ignore them. Did you pick up on anything from them that day, or was it just that feeling that you and Maureen had?
It was just a feeling, nothing from them at all. In fact, when we were upstairs, as a joke, I asked him if the house was haunted, you know, so Cap said to his wife, Ronnie, have you ever seen any ghosts here? And she said, nope. And he goes, nope, I guess not. You know, so that was it. But he had refinished the dining room floor. They're beautiful wood floors. And a few months prior, he had refinished the floors. So I thought maybe there were some type of fumes in there from the varnish or whatever he used, and also possibly made me lightheaded. But he explained later that wasn't the case.
That makes some sense. I could see why you would be, you know, if the house has been closed up and you're like, well, obviously this feeling's, I can attribute it to this.
Correct. Yeah, I was looking for something to attribute it to. It was an old fuel oil furnace, and there were some fumes in there, stuff like that, you know. So I thought, well, that's probably what it was, even though Maureen kept coming back, you know, saying something wants us to live here. And it was just my daughters and I when we moved in. Maureen, we weren't married at the time yet, so it was just my daughters and I living there.
And also, you really wanted a farmhouse.
Absolutely.
So you found this farmhouse, and how exciting, because it does sound like it was an amazing house.
And the rent was inexpensive even for the day. This was back in real early 86, so it's been a long time, but the rent was $450 a month. and it was on 2 acres and it was a nice house. I was really excited about that. It just came out of a $650 a month house payment prior to that, before I rented this house. So I was excited about the inexpensive rent.
So then that could explain the feelings you were having too.
Excited. I was anxious. You know, I'd been looking for a house for a few months and couldn't find anything. And then this one hit the market. Of course, at that time, it was all newspaper, you know, so I saw the ad in the newspaper and called the number. And he said, yeah, we've had quite a few people look at it, you know, so far. So I made an appointment to go. It was the next day. So it all worked out. But yeah, I was very excited about it.
But you went back. Was it right after you rented it and you went in and you didn't have that feeling?
That's correct.
The next day?
Yeah, it was on a Monday. So we looked at the house on Saturday, and Cap called me on Monday and said he was going to rent it to us. So my daughters and I went over there. I did not have any of those feelings at all. Nothing, I mean, not even a twinge, except, you know, just the excitement of, you know, getting the house. My daughters didn't act like they felt anything either, which I was curious about to see how they would react in there. The house didn't have any fumy smell from the refinishing of the wood or anything like that. There wasn't anything to indicate that there were any type of fumes or anything in there, you know. So, but yeah, they didn't really respond at all until we were there for a little while. And I was outside and they were inside. And they were upstairs looking at the bedrooms and searching the house. And then they came storming out, screaming, and ran to me. I was in the backyard by the shed and said they heard somebody walking around in the house. Of course, then my first thought was, well, maybe Cap came over and he, you know, but I didn't see him. I was outside, so I knew there wasn't anybody there. But they said they heard somebody walking up the stairs, and they thought, of course, they assumed it was me. So they looked around and they called, and they didn't see me or didn't hear me. And then they heard them walking into my bedroom, and they were in the closet at that time thinking I was hiding. Well, now somebody's in my bedroom. So that's what scared them, and that's why they came clamoring down the stairs and outside.
And as a skeptic would, you debunked that for them, and which was good parenting too. You don't hardly want to say, well, kids, there must be some mysterious entity in this home.
Right. You won't believe what happened to me the first time I was in here, you know, something right. like that. So, you know, I took them back inside, and Ray was 7. I didn't know, maybe the furnace was on, you know, and so sometimes vents crack and pop and make noise, and but there was no furniture in the house. So it was at that time. So it was a little echoey, you know, so I thought maybe that's what they heard. I think I had them convinced until we went back upstairs into Ray's bedroom. And then the door slammed downstairs. And it, you know, it slammed hard and it rattled everything. And of course they, excuse me, they started screaming. So we went downstairs to investigate. And from the kitchen in the back, there was a mudroom or catch-all room. And then from there, the door went outside. So that the mudroom door was closed. So when I opened it, the outside door and screen door were open. And the screen door was propped open. And it was quite windy that day. So I just said, there you go. The door is open. The wind came in. It slammed this door shut. So that was the, you know, pretty much my explanation. And that's what I thought had happened. And my daughter, Sherry, she's the one who propped the door open. So I tried to, you know, say, hey, are you afraid of yourself? Because you're the one who left the door propped open and blew this door closed. You know, so Ray obviously or immediately accepted my explanation. But after they went back outside and I came back in to close things up, the mudroom door, if you walk in the back, the mudroom door was on the left and the knob was on the left-hand side. So when you open it and walk into the kitchen, if that mudroom door was open and the wind blew into the house, it wouldn't blow the door shut, it would blow it back against the wall. So I studied that for a little bit, and I thought, well, how in the world did it do that? And later Maureen said, well, it probably just, you know, whipped around the back of the door and closed it. I don't think it was physically possible to do that, but, you know, who am I? I'm not a physicist. So I just kind of accepted it and said, yeah, okay, that's probably what happened.
Did you really believe that? Or were you just kind of convincing yourself, maybe?
I did kind of believe it because I didn't think there was, you know, anything going on there, paranormal thing at that point. So it was just the wind and it blew the door closed somehow, and that was that.
I mean, that's pretty good debunking because it was windy.
Yeah, it was windy. So, and the door was propped open.
Yep. So that it kind of does explain it.
Mm-hmm.
But your girls definitely heard someone walking in the house. And
they say to this day. Yeah, they definitely, you know, would just somebody walking up the steps with some type of shoes on, coming right up the steps like you would normally walk up there. Didn't hear any, you know, voices or other noises, just the walking.
You ended up going ahead and moving in.
Sure.
And the girls were okay with it. Like, you kind of, that was enough to convince them, right?
Yeah.
That everything
that was
enough. Fine.
They had no problem at all with it. You know, Ray, she just, you know, she accepted it. It just, you know, and I told her it's an old house and old houses make noises, you know, and noises are different. And so when Sherry would say things like, we never heard that in our house, or we never heard that at grandma's house, it's like, yeah, well, every house has a different noise. So it's just different. That's all. So once they get used to the noises, it'll be okay. Of course, they didn't hear people walking up and down the stairs all the time. So it was quite normal for a long time.
After you moved in, when did you start feeling like maybe there's something else going on here?
Well, the day we moved in, moving day, the girls are with their grandparents, and Maureen was there. She was in the kitchen putting stuff away, and I was doing things around the house. But then I heard footsteps upstairs, and they're all wood floors upstairs. So I was in the dining room, and I heard footsteps above the living room ceiling, which my bedroom was above that. So I went there and listened and thinking, there's a stupid raccoon or something up there. Well, I called Maureen in and we both listened, but it was definitely somebody light with hard sole shoes just walking across the room. And I already had dressers up there in my bed I had to put together and all that, you know, so that was all up there. And somebody was just walking around up there. I thought it was probably an animal. Of course, Maureen said no, because he'd be hearing clicking of little claws if it was an animal. And it was obviously heavier than an animal. But I, you know, went upstairs and we looked around and we didn't see anything. So that's when she started discussing the house is haunted. Of course, you know, I said, no, I don't think so. You know, then she asked, well, how can you explain the walking around? And I thought it was maybe a branch. There was big pine trees around the house. And I thought maybe a branch was hitting the roof. So actually, when we were up there, I said, it's probably just the branch hitting the roof. And she said, well, how come we don't hear it now? I said, because you're talking and we can't hear it. But if you weren't talking, we might hear it. I was just coming up with something. You know, I wasn't going to admit that the house was haunted. But, you know, my thought was, too, with Maureen's insistence that the house was haunted. And so my question to her was, well, if something in here made us feel like we had to live here and we wanted to live here or we always lived here, why then would it try to scare the girls? See, that made no sense to me at all.
It makes no sense, or does it even care that there are kids there?
Right.
You know, is it just
or
doing
it?
Did it
even know
thing?
There were kids there?
Yeah.
You know, that's the other thing. So that's when, you know, Maureen, we were talking about the ghosts and so forth and so on, and afterlife and all of that. we'd be surrounded by ghosts if that was possible. So my question to her was a question of comprehension. Well, you know, her reasoning was that she could understand there's ghosts and blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, here's a simple question for comprehension. If you were in outer space and there was a fan in front of you and the fan was blades were spinning, would you feel any breeze? Which she thought that was a ridiculous question, but, and she said, yeah, I think so. And I said, no, you won't. There's no air in outer space, but we think there is because we've always known that spinning blades make a wind. So if we can't comprehend that, how could we possibly comprehend what the afterlife will be, or if ghosts exist, or if it's a time warp thing? So, you know, that was, and I was just trying to defuse the situation. I really didn't want to talk about it. It didn't scare me. You know, it's not like don't talk about it because I'm afraid. It's just that I didn't want, you know, I just didn't want that conversation around. I didn't want the girls to think that anything abnormal was going on and that my explanations was good enough for them. So that was my main focus, is not to have that get around and have the girls think that the house is haunted.
Do you kind of think, too, that if you were to admit it to yourself, like, which eventually you don't have any other way around it, it does, it's like, okay, this is real. But at that time, if you admit that something's going on, that makes it real. So as long as you've got that wall up between you and that, it's not real, it's not happening, period.
Right. The footsteps up there after first moved in, after that, there wasn't anything really going on. It wasn't like every day there was something happening or we'd hear footsteps every day. I mean, it'd go for months and nothing. It was, you know, all seems normal. Sherry did get up one night in the middle of the night and to get a drink of water. And she turned the kitchen light on and she was walking across the kitchen, you know, to get a glass, and the cupboard door opened up on its own. Well, when she finally told me about it, I said, well, you just got out of bed, it's like midnight, you woke up, you turned the light on, the cabinet door was probably already open, and you just thought it opened. Your eyes are getting used to the light, and you know, you're blinded by it and all that. She insisted that that was not the case. She was walking and the door started open. She stopped and watched it open. So that was one little event. And that was a few months, I think, after we had moved in. Nothing happened with me or Ray, you know, so no footsteps or anything like that.
That's interesting that you went quite a while without any activity.
It was quite a while.
And it's interesting, too, to me that the cupboard opened for her, because it was almost like, let me get this for you. Let me help you with this. You need a glass of water, and I'll open the cupboard for you. It's kind of sweet, creepy, yet kind of sweet.
I thought it was interesting that the entity, we call it, knew what she was coming in the kitchen for. It didn't open up the cereal bowl cabinet. It opened the one with the water glasses in it.
So it's kind of maybe a caring spirit?
It could be. Sherry eventually named him Jonathan for whatever reason. And I said, why do you call the ghost Jonathan? This was quite a long after we lived there. She said, I just feel that that's his name. You know, so it's like, okay.
You know, we did the same thing and my mom named it Henry. And I think...
Henry, there you go.
Because I think she did that maybe to kind of make it lighthearted and be like, oh, it's just Henry. Oh, it's just Henry.
It's just Henry.
That's what she would say.
It's just Jonathan. Yeah. No big deal.
That's okay. When did things start happening to make you go, okay, something's not right in this house?
So what happened was after Maureen and I were married, after our honeymoon, we got married in August. We'd been married a few weeks and the girls were with their mother that weekend. I had custody of them, so they lived with me full time, but they would go to their mothers for weekends, every other weekend. So Maureen and I, there was a huge cast iron bathtub, old clawfoot bathtub in the bathroom. I want to take a bath, or Maureen did, I can't remember which one. And we said, let's just take a bath together. We're married, so what the heck? So we both got in the tub, had some bubble bath in there. You could see, if someone was on the front porch, there may be an angle, if they're looking in the window, to see in the bathroom. So I closed the bathroom door, but I didn't latch it. I just closed it up against the door jamb. So we're in there, you know, having a bath. She's on one side of the tub, and I'm on the other side. I heard somebody walking through the kitchen into the dining room. Well, four boards into the dining room, the board squeaks. And we found that out when I mentioned that to Cap, the squeaky board. It was inevitable that you would always step on it. And it would have this little distinctive little squeak, not a real loud squeak, but a squeak. So I heard somebody walking, footsteps, and then I heard the board squeak. And they were walking toward the bathroom. I thought Cap was over when my friend stopped over and just walked in. You know, maybe I forgot to lock the door or whatever. And then the footsteps stopped right outside of the, they were heavy footsteps. They stopped right outside the bathroom door. So outside the bathroom door, you'd either go left in the dining room or right up the stairs. It was just a small little hallway there. And then the door started to open. It was opening slow, but deliberately opening. It's not like somebody pushed it. It was just opening slow until the doorknob touched the wall. So the door was wide open. And I had the week before nailed up a little full-length mirror. If you open up the bathroom door to walk out, you're looking in a mirror because Maureen needed a little mirror to see what she looked like before she went to work. Or whatever. Yeah. So I put that up there, which I could see clearly. And then where I was sitting in the tub, from that mirror, I could see to the kitchen entry door from the dining room. Well, there was nobody there. And of course, Maureen, she's panicky. They started walking the other way. And so I got out of the tub all wet and naked, not knowing if somebody was in the house. I had a towel. There was nothing, you know, and there's no weapon for me. And then I stepped out in the hallway and I looked into the dining room. And I could hear the footsteps going. They went in the kitchen, then they just faded, and there was nobody there. Of course, I searched the house, found a broom, carried the broom. Then I was thinking, well, maybe they were going the other way, and I would just, it's a panicky thing, you know, because I thought somebody was in the house. That's the only explanation, somebody's in the house. So I grabbed a broom, and I'm running around like an idiot with this broom in case I saw the intruder. Then I could hit him with the broomstick, but never found anybody, never saw anything, came up with no explanation. All the doors were all locked. The window was locked except for there was a window open in the dining room, but it was open about halfway, and there was a screen in there. So the screen was still there. So nobody had come in through that. So there was nobody in the house at all. And there was no way for me to explain it. That went away because obviously if you're sitting in the bathtub and the door opens and there's nobody there, but you can hear the footsteps, there's no explanation for that.
And you both heard it.
We both heard it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Maureen was terrified. You know, she was really terrified. And so I asked her, well, how's it feel to live in a haunted house now? You know, so she didn't think that was funny. But then she came up with an idea. Well, maybe it was a time warp thing or something. Maybe, you know, somebody long ago, we crossed some time warp thing, which I thought was ridiculous. So I told her, I'm either going to live in a haunted house or a time warp house. I can't take both of them, you know, so either one. But yeah, there was no way to explain it. At that point, I was leaning a little bit toward, yeah, there's something more going on here, but I didn't really want to accept it. And I didn't want it discussed. Because I didn't want my girls, you know, to hear anything about it.
Because at this point, they're doing pretty good. It's not like they're being terrified every night or anything like that.
No, nothing at all. There was nothing for them to be afraid of. Nothing was happening. We would hear some footsteps upstairs every once in a while. We're watching TV. We might hear like clickety-click across the ceiling. And I'd say, yeah, it's that stupid branch rubbing against the roof again. You know, just a little thing like that. Sherry, she was a little more attuned to it. She She knew I was just trying to make up excuses. She thought it was haunted for a long time, but she never let on that, hey, I think this house is haunted. You know, after the cup thing, you know, the cupboard door opening, that's when she started thinking about it. She had an event herself doing homework. This was a few years later. She was home by herself and she was on the couch doing homework. The mail truck came and it had squeaky brakes. So she was in the, and it was in the summertime during the day and the windows are open and she heard the squeaky brakes. So she went out to get the mail. And she came back in the house, her backpack and her math book and her trapper keeper and all that was gone. She left it on the couch and it was gone.
Oh, everything was just gone.
It was gone. It wasn't there. She went back, you know, she put the mail on the dining room table, walked back into the living room, and it was gone. So she was looking all over for it and thought, what the heck? But then she thought, I came home and took it as a joke because I'm a jokester. So she thought I just playing a trick. I took and hid it on her. Well, she went outside and looked in the garage. My car wasn't there. There was nobody there but her. She came back in and walking through the kitchen into the dining room, she noticed it underneath the dining room table. And the backpack was all zipped up. Her math book was in there, her trapper keeper, and the paper, the math paper was closed in the math book right on the same page that she had been working on. So she said that that scared her a little bit because it's like, well, what the heck happened there? But she finished her math. And she never mentioned that to me. She didn't say anything when I got home, like, hey, Dad, guess what happened? You know, she never mentioned it at all until quite a while later. But she didn't mention it. She would hear voices every once in a while and things like that. She would actually, the longer we lived there, she would try to induce something to happen. You know, I'm not afraid if you want to come out and talk to me, you know, that kind of thing. In her room, in the middle of the night. So she wasn't afraid of it.
That's quite brave. Mm-hmm. And a little crazy at the same time.
And a little crazy at the same time.
But yeah. For some reason, it's one of those things that I think you kind of are afraid of it, but drawn to it at the same time.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't scare me too much. And then we had, you know, we got a cat. Buckwheat, the cat. The cat would act like it was being petted. You know, when you pet a cat, you know, his tail goes up and all that stuff. It would act just like it was being petted and wrapping around an ankle and right in front of us. And then lay on its back and like it's getting its belly scratched. And then it was over and it'd jump up on the couch and it was all done. But that happened quite a few times. But the cat wasn't afraid of anything. But obviously there was something there petting it that it knew it was being petted and maybe it could see it. I don't know. I started taking notes. I got a little journal book one day. I was at a store and I thought, you know, I'm going to start writing this down. So I did. I got, you know, dear diary, guess what happened today kind of thing. So I started making notes about it, writing little things down and, you know, what the incident was after Sherry told me about the book. I, you know, wrote about her backpack being mysteriously moved. So I would write all that stuff down so I can kind of keep a log of it. After we moved, I stuck that little book in the closet somewhere. Sometime I got it out and I thought, you know, I should write a story about it, short story about it. Basically, just kind of write everything down, you know, kind of keep a journal of it so we can remember. So I did that in the later 90s. And then I said, okay, I have it. So that went away. So I was done. But anyway, so that was kind of our weekly, monthly little things that would come up, you know, just, and they were so commonplace. Some of them, like the closet that went between Ray's room and our room, it was quite wide. But when you walk through there, you would hit the coat hangers and make this tinkling noise. And that would happen quite often. And it would happen in the middle of the night. And we were so used to it, we didn't care, didn't bother us. But things would happen. Like one time my sleeping bag came out, we heard a thud, kind of a soft thud. And I got up and my sleeping bag was, the door to the closet was right next to the bed. So there was no door on it. It was just an entry, little open entry. But my sleeping bag was toward the end of the bed on the floor. So I didn't think anything of it. I said, that just fell off the shelf, no big deal. So I put it back up on the shelf and went to bed. Well, the next day I'm thinking about it, going, well, how could that sleeping bag fall off the shelf and fly all that way, you know, 6 or 8 feet? So when I got home from work that day, I tried everything I could to throw it off of the, well, I'd just drop it off the shelf and it would just stop. It took quite a bit of effort to throw it that far and then land on the floor. Of course, Ray came up there after school and saw me doing that, and she asked what I was doing. So she went down and told Sherry, and Sherry came up, said, hey, Ray said you're up here throwing your sleeping bag out of the closet. I had to come up and see if it was true. So I did, at that time, we'd lived there probably 3 years. I did explain it to her what had happened and explained how physically impossible it was just to roll off the shelf and go that far. So she thought that that was interesting. But the closet was very active, and it went between Ray's bedroom and our bedroom.
Or at some point while you lived there, when was it that you kind of became a believer and not so much a skeptic?
When we saw the little boy.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation with Kent J. Wolfe. In the next episode, we'll learn more about the little boy Kent and his family saw in their home. Find his book, Ghost Theories, Raising a Family in a Haunted House, on Amazon and other booksellers. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts, and you can try it for 3 days free. Or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. Find everything there, also all ad-free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thanks for listening.